right, our third case for this morning is Linder against Union Pacific Railroad, 13-14-22. And when you're ready, Mr. Andreoli.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tom Andreoli on behalf of Union Pacific Railroad. And if I may, I'd like to start by just very briefly referencing the duty allegation in the plaintiff's amended complaint, which is at the center of the district court's pre-remand order.
Well, wait, before you do that, I mean, I guess I need to be clear. You are here telling us that you're not trying to contest the remand.
Yes.
Which I think is correct, because the remand was done on jurisdictional grounds, and Thermtron and the subsequent cases say that that's really out of our hands. The remand is the remand. So your argument is under City of Waco, as I understand it, we can somehow reach before the remand and look at the decision to dismiss, to join the two non-diverse parties. And that's where I really can't quite follow you in a way, because the joinder decision is not the kind of decision that the Supreme Court talks about in the City of Waco. It doesn't resolve anything. It's not part of the case that gets resolved, and the kind of thing where the reversal would remand the entire controversy. It's just a joinder decision. And I do understand you also, in your brief, you say on page 39 of your brief, Union Pacific never argued that FERSA preemption gives rise to federal question jurisdiction or complete preemption. I think that's correct. I mean, if there were complete preemption, it would be a federal question case.
And, we are not taking that position, okay, Your Honor.
So it's conflict preemption, which the state courts are entirely capable of handling. So I don't see, if this case is going to be remanded anyway, it's just a joinder order that doesn't resolve anything in the way that City of Waco is talking about it, how this court has jurisdiction.
And Your Honor, I'll try to answer the question in two parts, and I appreciate the question. With respect to conflict preemption, what the court applied, the district court here applied, was conflict preemption.
But it didn't apply. All it did is it joined two parties and then left for the state court the preemption inquiry. And if what you need from us is some statement that says nobody has decided preemption, yay or nay, yet, then that's the way I see this case. The judgment of the court is to add two non-diverse parties who destroy diversity, 1447E, it's got to go back to the state court, and it seems to me you're entirely free back in the state court to argue to your heart's content about whether there's conflict preemption or not. It's your defense.
And I apologize, Your Honor, in addressing the conflict preemption point first, it goes in many ways right to the heart of what we're arguing. It's not conflict preemption. It's subject matter preemption.
It's not. That's complete preemption. No, you're creating some new category of preemption that doesn't exist.
Your Honor, I respectfully, with the Supreme Court twice has addressed the Federal Railroad Safety Act in the Easterwood case and the Shanklin case, and has determined that it is a field preemption question. It preempts the subject matter.
Which the state court is able to apply. It does not occupy the field in the same sense that complete preemption. Otherwise, it would be a federal question.
It would look like
LMRA. It would look like ERISA. It would look like the small number of areas.
It is not a complete preemption question.
So it goes back to the state court. And the state courts usually decide these issues.
Your Honor, I agree with you that a state court is entirely competent to decide a preemption question.
Right. Regrettably, even under the Railroad Act.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
Regrettably, what happened here is the district court decided the preemption question. It's not just a joinder, Your Honor.
I don't see that. Show me the language that you're relying on.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will. It's in I'm looking at the appendix, which it's App 6 within the appendix that is attached to our initial brief. And I can read from it. Based on the allegations in the proposed amended complaint, which is what was before the, if you have it, Your Honor.
Do not appear to be inconsistent you haven't done it based on the current presentations and arguments. And so he's essentially saying this is interlocutory. That doesn't read like a final judgment to me.
You know, I appreciate your comments. I'm doing my best to address them. What the court said is that they are permitted. He specifically said that they are permitted. So, Your Honor, you can look at it. There's two ways to look at it.
Well, where does he...
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm on the same page on App 6.
He's just making a non-futility argument.
And he permitted the claims. Now, the claims on their face, the claims that the plaintiff pled in the amended complaint, are preempted. The subject matter is covered by the federal regulations.
Back up. I mean, a district court certainly would be entitled, if somebody wants to join a party, to make the determination whether that joinder is futile. I mean, they do that with amended complaints all the time. But yeah. I looked at this paragraph, and I don't see anything other than a non-futility finding, and I personally don't see anything that prevents you from exploring your preemption points back in the state court where you concede you're going to be.
Your Honor,
is it your plan to file a new motion to remove as soon as you're back in the state court? Suppose you win here.
No, Your Honor. When we are back in state court, as I understand it, the district court's remand order, the district court's joinder order.
Suppose you win on joinder. Suppose we agree with you. And we decide to reach the joinder issue about whether these two railroad workers were properly joined. We agree with you. We say, oh, no, they shouldn't have been joined. The case you're agreeing goes back to the state court anyway. Now what are you going to do? It's still Lindner versus Union Pacific.
Your Honor, when we go back to the state court, if Your Honors grant the relief that we're requesting, which is to vacate the pre-remand order allowing the claims to go forward, despite the preemption defense, the remand is what it is under City of Waco, under this court's decision in Allen. We are not in a position to deal with the remand. What we could do back in the state court is have a preemption defense that is going to be addressed based upon field preemption rather than conflict preemption, which is what the district court judge here did, and which is incorrect. It's patently erroneous.
But it was a provisional procedural ruling. It wasn't a substantive merits ruling.
The argument
is still live. That's the whole import of this line of questions.
I understand the line of questionings, and I understand the line of questioning. And I understand the point. It is, and you certainly, if you look at my colleague's brief on behalf of the appellee, there is an understanding, and I believe this is a substantive ruling, a pre-remand substantive ruling on the merits with respect to the preemption defense that applies the wrong test and reaches the wrong result, such that it is going to be preclusive on all of the defendants below. We will no longer have a field preemption defense, the one that Congress intended, uniform national standards. We're going to be dealing with state law duties, which are not permitted, the state law duties, and we're going to be dealing with whatever state law duty.
You've just created this whole structure, though, that I guess I'm still having trouble seeing, because if we interpret the passage you pointed out in the district court's opinion as simply a provisional ruling about the futility or not of claims that would be brought against these two individual defendants, then when it goes back to the state court, none of the things you're talking about are off the table. You can talk about field preemption if you want to. You can talk about, you can move to dismiss the claims against these two workers if you're representing them, or their lawyers can if somebody else is representing them. I just don't see
how we
get to this parade of horribles that you're dying to reach.
Understood. Your Honor will bear with me. If this court has looked when this court has determined City of Waco, when it's looked at City of Waco, it's made a decision. It hasn't limited it to orders that would be appealable under Section 1292 or Rule 54. The court has specifically said this court has rejected limiting City of Waco to orders dismissing parties or claims. What this court has talked about is a substantive determination of the plaintiff's claims where federal appellate review might not otherwise be available, and that's specific language from this court, from the J.O. Alton School District decision, in which some Section 1983 claims were dismissed. It went down. and the court determined to address the dismissal. I believe that the district court did here was make a substantive pre-joinder, pre-Moran decision in which it applied the wrong test.
It doesn't finally resolve any claim, though. It just says you're in the group.
Your Honor,
that's all it does.
We read it differently, Your Honor, and I understand the line of questioning. I didn't not get it. I understand where Your Honor is going. I would refer to the court. The Fifth District addressed something somewhat similar in the Soli decision, which was a 1991 decision from the Fifth Circuit. And it was a complete preemption issue. And the court determined there was not complete preemption, and we're not arguing there is here, and sent it back. And what the circuit court said in that case, the Fifth Circuit, is because we interpret the remand order as jurisdictional, the state court will have an opportunity to consider the appellant's preemption defense, and this was under ERISA, and the district court will have no preclusive effect. That's not what happened here. That's not our understanding of the order that the court entered. The court determined to allow specifically preempted claims, applying the wrong test. And that's in some ways what's most important here.
I don't know why the Illinois appellate courts aren't perfectly capable of addressing whatever legal error may have crept in here.
I think it is the case that the Illinois appellate courts may be unavailable and unable to address it. And there's certainly case law out there.
Why?
The Fifth Circuit in Morris talked about it being absurd to propose that the proper forum to appeal a federal district court's order is the state appellate court. And I hear your question.
It's not appealing the order. This is, again, entirely provisional. The judge permitted an amended complaint. That is all. That's a procedural ruling.
And for our purpose, and for our the point we're trying to make, and I do understand Your Honor's questions and the court's questions, what we are saying the court did here was make a substantive determination that is going to affect this proceeding throughout. The district court here gave the green light to the state court.
Is this binding on the state courts?
Your Honors,
it's just not.
It is our concern and our belief that it will be binding, that it will have a preclusive effect.
Well, it may have some sort of metaphysical influence on the thinking of the state judges, but it's not binding in any legal sense.
Your Honor, here's the scenario that you can possibly imagine: is we go down below and we go to the state court judge because we now have an amended complaint on file, and we say this is preempted. This is preempted by field preemption. This is not allowed. There is no federal duty of care alleged here, nor can there be. And the state court says, well, the district court already addressed and resolved this question. It's law of the case, and it's binding, and not agreed. Well, then we're going to go all the way through the state court proceeding, through pleadings, dispositive motions, trial, jury instructions, and we're going to be dealing with a scenario where the test is going to be plaintiff's allegations do not appear to be inconsistent with any federal regulation or law. The Third Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, and I need to look at my notes because I don't want to give you the wrong citation. This is from the 2007 amendments to the Act, which clarified the Act. It never changed
Illinois
the field
courts,
preemption.
If I could interrupt,
yes,
only apply law of the case doctrine to final judgments,
and
which this was not. So, I mean, that's foreclosed under Illinois law.
Your Honor, I would hope that that is true. But
that's what all the cases say. So, I mean, I don't know how that argument could be made. There's absolutely no traction for it.
So you might want to save just a second for rebuttal if you're interested. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Running down.
Thank you.
Okay, sure. And so we'll hear from Mr. Dunn.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'd like to say that preemption is out of the case, but I think I agree with the Court that it is not out of the case. I agree that they will be able to raise it below. The only issue is how they're going to do it, and you know, the only question in my mind is, can they file a motion to dismiss? We've raised in our brief that some courts have found that a futility rejection is the equivalent of a 12b6 motion, so you know, maybe they can't file a 2615 motion to dismiss, but they certainly could file a summary judgment motion. They certainly could appeal the issue. So as this court's already said, preemption is in the case. I don't think there's anything that I can, I wish I could say it's not, but I think it is, unfortunately for us. The only other thing I would mention is that, you know, it's clear based on what the Second Circuit, Third, Fourth, Fifth, and Ninth have said, is that a motion for leave to amend is not a final order under Waco, and so the limited exception in Waco would not apply to this case. So unless there's any questions from the court.
No, thank you very much. So that wasn't much left to respond to, Mr. Andreoli, but I'll give you your final, whatever you have, two minutes.
Whatever I have time left, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Your Honor, the separate ground that we had asked for relief under was this court's mandamus authority. This court has looked at mandamus.
Why does that advance the ball? I mean, if it is a 1447 problem, D, then that covers appeal or otherwise.
It does not.
Mandamus.
That is correct, Your Honor. We agree.
The issues seem very overlapping to me.
Understood. To the extent Your Honors don't determine that this is a separate, severable, final pre-remand decision, then we're going to have very little luck under Waco, nor are we going to have luck under mandamus. If the court were to determine in looking at it that this was a substantive decision on the merits made by the court exercising its diversity jurisdiction, separate and apart from the jurisdictional question, that's going to be preclusive below. If the court were to go that far and were to humor me for purposes of the argument, then mandamus would be available if the court made a decision that it doesn't fit within this court's precedent on the Waco doctrine. Now, if we're looking at mandamus, it's very short, effectively unreviewable, irreparable harm. This court has looked at a protracted litigation as meeting the irreparable harm standard. That was the Abels case. And we talk about a clear right. The decision the district court made here with respect to preemption under the Federal Safety Act, the Railroad Safety Act, was wrong. It was wrong on the test. It was wrong on the result. The plaintiffs did not plead a federal standard of care, and it is not a claim that is allowed. Now, if the courts were to go that far, the court has looked at this, and we put all of this in front of the district court. The district court ignored all of the case law in making its determination. That would fit within the mandamus authority. I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.